Thank you for standing by. We'd like to begin with the roll call. Christine Nordstrom.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Mr. Muthusami, but he is on mute. Michelle Nalum. Michelle Nalum.
Michaeli Nalum.
Okay, thank you. Ted Suzuki.
Yeah, don't just call the names if you see them on MeetingView. Don't wait for to respond.
Okay. Margie Milam, Tatiana Kramsova, did not get a hold of her. Alan Greenberg, Daryl Langdon Orr, Michael Connor, Barry Cobb, Ron Wickersham, Marika Konings, and James Bladel.
Thank you very much. All right. I think our work today is to start looking. Yes, go ahead.
Excuse me. I have apologies from Paul Diaz, Mason Cole, Oliver Holt, and Karim Mohammed Altomani.
Thank you. And I see Olivier has joined us now also.
I have indeed. Thanks.
All right. Marika, I have a question before we start going over these. Some of the items you put in the comment summary were staff. When did those come, or where did those come from?
I met with some people internally to get their feedback, so basically I collated those and just put them in here. They weren't
okay.
In the name. I thought it would be easier just to group them here together with the comments that were made in the public comment forum as well as the San Francisco meeting.
Thank you very much. Are there any other issues we want to start? We want to bring up before we start going over these one by one? Not hearing anyone scream and not seeing any hands.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Ron. Yes, this is Ron Wickersham. Yeah, I was wondering if the staff recommendations was in the form of a report that we could read in the, like, other public comments, or were they just randomly submitted to Marika?
I don't think Marika does anything randomly, but Marika, would you comment?
Now, this is Marika. I basically got together with some colleagues from different departments, legal department, compliance, and our services team, just talk through the recommendations and get their input already at this stage, because several of these at some point will move into implementation. I thought it would be helpful, you know, to get any feedback that they might have at this stage of the process instead of waiting until, you know, everything goes through adoption and then come back with certain questions that we might already be able to address now. So there's no formal report. This is basically what I wrote up based on the discussions I had with different colleagues and the feedback I received from them.
Yeah, I will add that based on discussions we're having in the PDP working group, this kind of activity and this kind of response from staff is exceedingly welcome from my point of view. That after we submit all the recommendations is not the time for someone to warn us that they can't be implemented or something like that. James.
Just real quickly, and I apologize, it may already be scheduled on our agenda, but are we still, we've missed a few meetings over the past few weeks, and I'm just checking if we're still on track to complete at or around the Singapore meeting. Is that?
I'm sure hoping so. I don't think anyone has the stomach for going much farther than that.
Okay.
You know, I don't think at this point we're going to make the official publication deadline for the Singapore meeting. We may. Some of the items that have been raised, I think, are going to require some amount of work and crafting to incorporate. But I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be finished by Singapore, whether we meet the publication deadline or not. I don't see anything here that is likely to be of sufficient onus so onerous that it requires that. I may take back my words later.
And then once we're ready to dive into the comments, I just had an overarching thought on those as well, but I'll hold my comment until that time.
Okay, well, I think we're just about ready. I was just going to comment that I hope not viewed as presumptuous to put my initial comments in writing just to start the process going, and with the hope that at least some of them everyone's going to agree and we don't have to discuss at length on the discussion, but it wasn't an attempt to do anything more than to put some initial thoughts down in writing. So, James, if you have an overall thought before we start, Go ahead.
Alan, this is Marika. If I can just make a comment on the timeline, because just to note that indeed the official publication deadline for Singapore is the 30th of May, but as this report, as we're aiming to have a final report out, is not intended for public discussion, I think the only real deadline we have is if we want the Council to consider it in at the Singapore meeting is the 8 day before the GNSO Council meeting deadline to get it on the agenda and have the report submitted. So that would give the group more time if the intent is to have it discussed by the Council in Singapore.
Well, my intent would be to try to get it on the Council agenda so that we can present it in not on the formal necessarily on the formal GNSO Council meeting, but on the weekend agenda so we can discuss it.
On that note,
I was going to say, if we make the one-week deadline, Council is not going to vote on it. The stakeholder groups will not have had sufficient time to look at it. So I don't think that deadline has particular meaning, other than it would be nice if we got everything wrapped up so we could discuss it on the weekend meeting.
Right. On that note, I have already, because Glenn has already asked the different staff members to provide input on the schedule, because she's working on that with Mary Wong, the vice chair of the GNSO Council. So I have already indicated that, you know, we're intending to have a final report ready there for discussion. And I've also indicated that I think it would be helpful to have at least 45 minutes available to, you know, go through the recommendations and have an in-depth discussion with the Council, as indeed they're expected as a next step to, you know, consider it and vote on it. So.
Thank you for that. I think I agree, basically. James?
Yes, thanks, Alan. This is James. So I just glanced at some of the comments as they were coming in. I admit that I have not gone through the comment review tool or some of your markups. I haven't had a chance to do that yet. But just an over, you know, all-encompassing thought was, as I was reading these, is, you know, does this particular comment, whether, you know, regardless of where it's coming from, does it touch on areas that we've covered earlier in the working group? Does it reopen discussions that we have, either through compromise or whatever, we have put to bed? Does it introduce new data that maybe we overlooked or we didn't consider or perspectives that we didn't have in the working group? And I basically was trying to apply some filters or some criteria to each of the comments so that it wasn't just a, you know, we hate this idea or we love this idea, you know. So I guess it might be helpful and it might help us get through the comments faster if we, you know, established at the outset what we wanted to hold up as a yardstick to each comment to determine whether or not it was circling back on previously discussed topics or whether it was something new or whether it was something that we genuinely forgot or overlooked or something that we're proposing that won't work. I'm curious if you feel like there's any value in doing that at the beginning.
I'm not sure we need to do it at the beginning, but I think that classification is a good one to keep in mind as we're going through it. Having gone through them all yesterday, the only one I can recall that reopened something that we thought we put to bed is the comment from the registries on the change to who is, where they said that they had suggested something which perhaps could be implemented, which is a middle ground that we had essentially discarded. Other than that, I didn't find a lot that reopened ones that we need to reopen. There were a number of things where people made suggestions that were good suggestions, and I think we can incorporate them. But I didn't see a lot where people raised issues that we had discussed, where in my mind there was sufficient reason to go back and reopen them. That I may prove to be wrong, but that was my take. Marika, did you obviously have gone through them with a semi-fine tooth comb? What is your impression overall?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think the same kind of feeling. I think there's somewhere there's some clarification suggested that I think might be helpful. Where, you know, as we as a working group have been so, you know, deep into these issues that we might have missed that certain aspects are not clear in some recommendations. But I agree with your assessment. I think there weren't very many items that brought new information to the table that the working group hasn't considered yet or hasn't, you know, deliberated on without end.
Yeah, the only one which we obviously have to go through the process of discussing is the suggestion that the 8 days is insufficient, which clearly is a disagreement by a number of the commenters that I think, you know, this group needs to reopen and decide whether those comments are sufficient cause for us to make a change or not.
Well, Alan,
other than that,
that's exactly what I was pointing to, or at least was thinking of, is what, besides thinking that that is insufficient, why is it insufficient? You know, I mean, where we discussed the length of the period, I think, extensively in our discussions. So where, when we say that we don't like it or we do like it, why do we not like it or like it? That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, well, I think when we look at the comments, we need to ask those questions and perhaps go back and ask for clarification or additional rationale or something like that. That's the only one I think that falls into that category. Ron, you had your hand up, I thought. Then my screen just went blank.
Oh, yeah, I put it up tentatively. Just that we discussed it a great length of time, this particular issue of the number of days. However, the selection of the number was deferred meeting after meeting, and then in the rush to get published, had the briefest time. So I don't think it was something that was enormously discussed. The particular number was not enormously discussed. Just the concept that a number would be there.
Yeah, we've honed in on what is probably the one contentious issue, and I'm not sure we need to put that one to bed before we start looking over them overall. My inclination would be to put that one on a shelf into the end, but if the group feels otherwise, we can obviously continue discussing that now. Seeing no one push that we do, I would suggest we go into the instrument at this point and start looking at them one by one. Marika, do you want to take a lead in trying to sort of summarize them one by one, preferably without reading everything, but just bring up the issue?
Marika, I'm happy to do so, although I think you've already provided most of the input on them. So, well, the first I've grouped in general comments that didn't really relate to any specific recommendation. So the first one there is actually a comment that was made in the San Francisco meeting asking whether there could be an ordering of recommendations in the order of priority.
And I'll jump in. My response was I don't support this. I agree with the registrar's statement that all the recommendations should be taken as a group, and that we not prioritize them. The concept of prioritizing is if they're going to be implemented one by one and the order is relevant, and there's no obvious rationale for doing that in the recommendations we're looking at. Clearly, the timeline to implement some of them will be longer than others. And Marika, I'm not sure if we say that anywhere, but I know in the discussions we said that we acknowledge the timeline will be different, and one shouldn't hold up the easy ones for the ones that will take more time. We should just make sure that's clear somewhere in an obvious place in the recommendations. I did comment that I thought the recommendations should be reordered to group them together in a logical sense as opposed to the charter questions, though. Ron. And Ron, are you there?
Hello? Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Yes, this is Ron Wickersham speaking. Since things are phased in, could not the group indicate which things do take longer and which things aren't? I mean, and maybe that was what the question of priority was really addressing. So I think you're saying in general, things may take longer. Some things may take longer than others, but should we not say which things would take longer?
I think we can indicate our expectations. The comment was made, however, in light of if we only have resources to implement five of them, which five? And I don't think it's the group's intent that we look at it from that point of view. We have Margie, Marika, and Barry. I'm not sure quite which the order is. Margie?
Yeah, this is Margie. In terms of priority, I can see why that's not, wouldn't make much sense, but I just wanted to highlight something that we've been talking about in the PDP group, and the question is whether these recommendations should be interdependent. In other words, when the recommendations, say, go up to the GNSO Council, can the GNSO Council pick from them, or are they, considered interdependent? And I just don't know if we've given that much thought to these at this point.
Okay. Well, we certainly have the opinion of the registrars. Marika.
Yeah, it is, Marika. I need to note that on that specific item, there is a comment further down that talks about, the consideration. It is considered all interdependent and one package. On the prioritization issue, I think where the working group could prioritize is those items that require further work, that actually don't go to implementation, because that's normally, a staff task. And staff might come back and saying, well, we can't do everything at the same time. GNSO Council, what would you prefer? But likely they'll work on the different items, indeed, in tandem or whatever goes together at the same time. But for those items where it is actually, back to the GNSO to do more work, we have certain items, for example, on, developing educational materials where it's, ICANN and different groups. So those are items where the working group might want to consider, telling the GNSO Council, if there's only a few items that you can take on, further work on, these are the ones we think are the most important. But I think most of the recommendations actually relate specifically to implementation work, and there it might be, less relevant to give that kind of priority to it, as it's more a staff task, and I think staff will try to do its best to, take all this together, taking into account that some items might need longer to implement than others. But for that reason, there will be an implementation plan, which also will be open for public comments, so there are still opportunities there to indicate as well if people feel that certain things are taking too much time compared to others.
It might be worthwhile for the work group to put an expected timeline or something like that on the various recommendations. Barry.
Thanks, Alan. I guess overall, and this is Barry for the record, I think overall, and what we've experienced over the last couple of months in the GNSO council sessions, and certainly, Alan, when you were part of the council, you know this as well as anybody, but, from what I've seen, there's been quite, for lack of a better word, a quagmire in terms of how things are getting implemented from the output of the PDP process. And certainly with respect to the RAP, while not being a PDP, was a pre-PDP. It's very clear that the council was requiring a lot more assistance in how they proceed with the next steps of implementing the recommendations that came out of that. And I suspect they'll need that. They'll be hungry for these same requirements when they get the recommendations coming out of PEDNR. It seems to me, minus some rough edges, we have a very good, a pretty healthy consensus model coming out of our efforts here with PEDNR. I strongly advise that whatever we do here in the close of the working group, that one of our deliverables is that we put together what we think is probably the best implementation of the policy going forward. It doesn't need, I know that we're only policy here and we're not supposed to get into implementation. However, we should give them some high-level framework of what should be done, is my opinion. Otherwise, if we give them the recommendations just as they are willy-nilly without some sort of, and I don't really like the word prioritization with respect to this comment, but some sort of roadmap on what it should look like, then I think it'll get torn apart at the council level, and we may lose what we've gained so much work here. Thank you.
Yeah. Just for the record, on a PDP like this, I don't see that council has any responsibility other than approving it and then perhaps periodically looking at the implementation plan that staff presents, from meeting to meeting. the PDP output should be sufficient that council does not have any work activities unless we explicitly recommend one, of course. James?
Hi, Alan. James speaking. Thank you. I think I'm going to disagree with Barry a little and with Marika a lot. I feel like we are discussing this pretty extensively in the context of the PPSC, and we have heard a lot of the discussions in San Francisco as council was attempting to prioritize some of its efforts. I believe that that function, the management of the policy process, is the purview of the council. I don't think it's appropriate for them to ask each individual PDP to provide a list of priorities, because that's, in my view, that's stating that some recommendations are less important, and if they were so, then why did we make them? You know, I truly believe that we should do two things. We should indicate when recommendations are interdependent, and we should indicate the level of consensus for the recommendations. And, you know, I'm probably out on my own in this regard, but I think that's it, really. That's what we need to be handing to council here as a finished product. I understand that that does not necessarily make their lives easier, but it does, I believe, stay true to the process.
I guess I have a question for any of the speakers who think that we do owe council more guidance as to what to do next. I don't see council doing very much in this other than approving it, unless we make an explicit recommendation that says council should form a new working group to do such and such, or should further investigate something, and I don't think we're actually making any of those recommendations. I'm not sure, you know, to a large extent, council's job is finished when they vote yes or no to our recommendations and pass it on to the board. You know, typically staff comes back as a courtesy and refreshes, you know, or updates them on the implementation progress, but I don't see council having to do a lot more at this point. Maybe I'm missing something. If anyone can fill me in, I'd be like to understand that. Seeing no one rush to the microphone. Marika, are you satisfied with what to write for number one, or do you feel we need to discuss it more at this point?
Just Marika, no, I think I have enough to note down there.
Okay.
Want me to continue?
Yeah, please. Sorry.
So comment two, the IPC notes that they have made some comments for where they think there should be further clarification and refinement, and the details of those are, I think, further down, so I'm not really sure whether we need to discuss that any further now.
If nothing else, that we in our recommendations said some of them need to be refined, so I don't think we can disagree. Go ahead.
So the third comment raises a bit of the person that makes the comment makes the point that he feels that there's a statement or a recommendation missing, which basically states that the transfer of a domain name during the auto new grace period or RGP shouldn't be allowed unless there's the explicit approval of the RNHAE at the time of the transfer.
The use transfer here is not transfer as in IRTP, but transfer as in moving from one registrant to another, I presume.
Yes, correct. Yeah. That's how I interpreted it as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole issue of do registrars have the right, in capital letters, to put the term in their registration agreement, which allows them to switch the registrant after registration. And I think we decided a long time ago that since it doesn't appear that with the recommendations we're making, that does not impact the original registrant's ability to renew, and therefore we decided that was out of scope for this PDP. Something that a lot of people feel, and it shows up again later in the recommendations, but I think we decided this was not in scope since it didn't stop us from addressing the problems that we're addressing. Is that the general consensus of the group, or do we need to reopen this one? Ron?
Yes, this is Ron Wickersham. If we found that there was that registrant ability to renew, I'm reading from your comment that the registrant's ability to renew could be guaranteed, and I think could is kind of weak as a response. I mean, is it guaranteed, or is only possible to be could but maybe isn't? And if it is guaranteed, could our justifications include the guarantee that we relied upon for that?
Anyone else want to try to address that? I think I made my, I thought I made myself clear, but James?
Yeah, it's James speaking. So, you know, we did touch on this, I think. Some of our recommendations could be construed as, if not guarantees, let's call them additional protections against loss. You know, we did say about the eight-day period. We did discuss, that the RRAE, okay, I messed up the acronym, but the person who was the registrant at time of expiration remained that entity regardless of any changes to the WHOIS record. So in some ways, I think maybe we danced around this issue because it was out of scope, but I don't feel that we left the underlying concern unaddressed. I think we've hit it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at an alternate scenario or an alternate universe, if we had decided that everything, in our recommendations is true except the 8 days was 39, it would have addressed this person's concern without requiring that registrars cannot change the owner and transfer the domain. Not transfer, but change the owner. I mean, we didn't have a date of 39 or 42 or whatever, but we could have put that number in, and given the protection that this commenter is looking for, without having to invalidate the registrar's ability to use the terms they currently use in their agreements.
Well, and if I may, Alan, we've also separated the dependency that I think this commenter implies. You know, as it was said, once the WHOIS record is changed, that the original registrant doesn't have the ability to recover. And I think what our recommendations are saying is there are some abilities to recover the name, regardless of whether there are changes in the WHOIS. So
I think we need to craft the words to answer him carefully and not be glib.
Right,
But from my perspective, we have addressed the issue. And, yes, I understand some people don't like the practice, but I don't think this PDP is the guise under which we can change that. All right, with the acknowledgement that we're going to have to word this, that Marika will have to word this carefully, let's go on.
Yeah, this is Marika. So the next comment is more a general statement for what's to come in relation to the ALAC comments that were made. So basically saying that they support most of the recommendations. There's one that they disagree, and then there's one other one that they felt wasn't addressed, and that's actually the next comment, which relates to resellers. And I think they expressed their displeasure with the fact that the issue of resellers isn't appropriately addressed in the report.
I've hopefully wisely not put comments in on ALAC statements that I personally support. Therefore, I'd like someone else to take the lead on discussing item 5. James.
Just a question, and I don't know if you or any of the other ALAC folks were involved in drafting this language, but I'm curious as to the meaning of the word gaming in this context. To me, gaming usually means you have some insider info that you're leveraging to the disadvantage of other interested parties, I guess. I'm not really sure what are the resellers doing in this context.
Olivier or Cheryl want to make any comments?
I was going to say, perhaps now I've managed to unmute myself, which Cheryl, for the record here, took me several attempts. my memory on that goes along the following lines, and then Olivier might have better clarity because it's slightly later in his day. For example, there was a concern that if you had sufficient number of resellers, which are sort of bogus or pipes, or this, it would give people an advantage. Most of the use of gaming in the end user world is often linked with insider information, but tends to drift far more into the industry side or the supply side, having an unfair advantage to somehow disadvantage the client or end user side. So we're probably less narrow in our use of gaming. And at that, I'll see if Olivia has more clarity and a better memory on that.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's Olivier here. No, you've been very clear on this. We're not using the word gaming in as restricted a way as the one that was mentioned there. We're looking at it as a wider thing. I'm not sure if you hear the noise in the background. As a wider view of insiders being able to play the system to their advantage. Thus not affording the usual average internet user out there the fairness that they should be afforded. Thank you.
I'd get less concerned, Cheryl, again. I'd get less concerned about you blocking up in the word game or gaming and if you like, insert lack of trust or continued lack of trust, if that makes it easier to parse and analyze.
Michele?
Okay. Look, right, in the chat there, both myself and James have thrown around a couple of words that might suit as potential replacements for the term gaming. I mean, abuse, exploitation, exploit. I had a look at the original ALAC document, and it doesn't really explain the reference very clearly. But speaking to the actual comment as it stands, I mean, ultimately, as we've said ad nauseum, resellers, I can't accredit a registrar as responsible for their resellers. So if there's an issue, the only sane way that we can actually address it at present is for you to raise an issue with a policy or a process involving registrars, as we're the only ones that are bound by a contract. So I personally kind of find the comment, it's like, while I can try to understand where they're coming from, it would be helpful if ALAC gave more detail on exactly what issues they see as being, how can I word this, specifically related to resellers that aren't bound by registrars' contract or something. I'm just having difficulty getting my head around it. Thanks.
Yeah, I put my hand up as a participant and not the chair. I guess ultimately a lot of the ALAC comments come from me, because I've been interacting with ALAC for the last 2 years or 2.5 years on this overall issue. And resellers have always been one of the thorns, because they're virtually always involved in the anecdotes and reports of problems. And that was why I was pushing within the work group to have an explicit statement, say that, what essentially what McKaylee said everyone knows, but put it explicitly and make it clear that all responsibilities have to be carried out regardless of whether it's done by the registrar or the reseller on their behalf. And, I believe that a statement like that would have given a level of comfort, which the silence, simply because we know it's contract law, does not. And with that, I'll put my hand up. James?
Yeah, and just to probably build on that, I know that we've got a gap here. I think that when we discuss resellers in the context of the lack of control, I think it's the term that Cheryl used, how long of a leash the resellers are kept on might be another way of putting it. I know that you mentioned it's always a perpetual thorn in the side of the ALAC, so I think in the registrar's continuous confusion, because the resellers are either authorized or not authorized. They are either under contract or not under contract with the they have to be under some sort of agreement with the registrar, the accredited registrar, the accredited entity. But the important thing is that they really just don't have an existence where I can hit them over the head. And if we were to define that and then accredit resellers, then it would move one more step further down the road, and the different other companies in the ecosystem would take that role. So I understand that there's these concerns, but I think that we're trying to see realistically, there's the resellers don't sign the RAA, so we've got to hold the registrar of record accountable for the actions of their resellers, and then either trust or go after those registrars when we feel that they've lost control of their resellers. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess the answer to this one is, we discussed this a lot. We, in fact, had some draft recommendations in which mentioned resellers. They ended up getting deleted along the way based on a combination of advice from ICANN and the inability to settle on words that everyone was happy with. And I think we have to simply on this one say we are divided. We couldn't come up with a recommendation which would satisfy all of the parties that we felt comfortable with. And if that means this is one of the areas that we failed on from the point of view of some groups, then I think we have to live with that. I'm not sure we can reopen it and fix the problem any many better now than we could have originally. And as much as I or others might want to see that this addressed in a different way, and certainly not, by the way, James, in the extent of licensing and accrediting resellers. That was never the intention. But I think
happy to go there, though.
Well, you can take that battle on, Cheryl.
Cheryl, I was pointing out that we have resellers and we have resellers of resellers and we have resellers
exactly.
of resellers of resellers. And if you
exactly
license,
right.
let's say, tier one, then tier two just moves up and takes its place, and we create tier N plus one. So it's just this thing that we will never get to the, this is part of a commercial food chain, and what we need to do is go to that one.
That's where education of the registrar comes in as well. Then have an ability to say who I am purchasing off and what risks I'm taking goes along the lines of informed consent, and that they understand the difference between a reseller and a registrar. And let's face it, you all know that many of them, most of them, don't.
May I suggest that this is an interesting topic that perhaps warrants additional policy work or community input work, but perhaps is not, will be not part of this PDP?
It's not, not for
it's
here.
Certainly a wider issue than just post-expiration renewal issues.
Yep.
Anyone feel uncomfortable with walking away from it saying, well, maybe we failed, maybe we didn't, but we're not going to go any further into it at this point? Why am I never invited to those? I'm not sure. I'm not reading these comments well, this chat well enough.
James, talk to Michaeli on that, mate.
Oh, this is something about beers. Okay. I want to be invited too. Can we all agree we're walking away from five? It's an issue that we're not likely to come to closure with, and although it's relevant to the Pedner PDP, it is not. Pedner is not the sole thing it is relevant to.
Right, it kind of undercuts a lot of things. It's not PDP's place to solve, or Pedner's place to solve it.
Well,
exactly.
If we could have, it would have been nice. But as I said, I personally would have liked at least a statement in the RAA making it clear we didn't come to closure on that, and I can't see we're going to in the next 3 weeks either. So I think we're going to have to declare a failure to resolve this to everyone's satisfaction and walk away from it. Mikey.
Thanks, Alan. It's Mikey. You know, that last little bit that you just said sort of strikes me as a pretty good summary for most of our responses to most of these issues, which is, yeah, we considered that, and we did the best we could. Thanks for your comments, but this is what we got. And I'm sort of swinging back around to James's initial question right at the top of the call, which is, do we really need to go through, I mean, we're five in, I mean, this process, if it continues at this pace, will certainly blow our Singapore deadline. I'm just wondering if there isn't another way to tackle this that might be a little faster. Because this is feeling like ripping the Band-Aids off of old wounds. And we kind of rip off the Band-Aid and poke ourselves hard with a stick, and then finally at the end we put the Band-Aid back on. And, you know, I'm not sure that it's really that useful.
Yeah. In retrospect, I think I would have suggested that we put the general non-focused ones at the end instead of the beginning. I think these are the ones that are the vague, wishy-washy ones, and they're taking more time because they're not targeted. So I don't think the time we're taking on these is indicative of what's going to take for the rest of them. At least I hope not. Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc here. I was just going to also say something similar to that. I do agree that the subject is a recurring subject, the subject raised by ALAC, and it's something which we'll be raising again, and it probably touches on more than one subject, including the educational side of things, education of the registrar. So that was just a comment I wanted to make. Thank you.
All right. If everyone's happy with five, let's go on to six and see if we can start make our way down to real recommendations soon. Marika?
Susan, Marika, on six, I think this is well just a prelude to the comments that Intel is making. They're basically saying that they've, you know, added some further detail and clarification to some of the recommendations, or that, you know, in their comments, because they want to make sure as well that they see the value of standardization of the overall process, but also want to make sure that there's no additional costs involved unintended consequences that, you know, might harm rights of consumers and brand owners. So I think this is just a prelude, and we'll see in further detail in their comments what kind of clarification they're actually looking for.
All right. I don't think that requires specific answers.
Nope.
Seven?
I see James has a hand up.
Oh,
I'll take it down. No problem.
Gee, that was good.
So the next comment is from the registrar stakeholder group, and as we mentioned before, they're actually noting that in their view, all the 14 recommendations are interdependent and should be considered and adopted as a group by the GNSO Council when they consider it.
And I said I tend to agree. Is there anyone who disagrees that we should recommend that they be treated as a group? Many ticks. I've never seen that many ticks that quickly before.
Well,
thank
Lord,
you
that
all.
Could also be, that could almost be consensus.
We could do a poll on that.
You do your poll of the VI follow-on, Will.
I've got a sad story to tell about that. The button guys went ahead and made the buttons without my approval, so there's no need for a poll.
Oh, life is full of problems. Number eight.
So number eight actually already relates to section 7, the deliberations of the working group relating to charter question 1, and the registry stakeholder group actually knows that they feel that the issue of calls that are made as part of the audit renew grace period are not adequately addressed. I think they, as I read their comment, they seem to believe that the way it's written, it appears that the registrar is absorbing extra cost. Well, I think they point out that the registrar actually is reimbursed by the registry if the domain name is deleted. So I think they're just asking for a clarification of that.
I went and reread that section in the report, and I didn't see what they seem to be referring to. So, Marika, maybe if it's not obvious to you on reading, maybe you can follow up with David and try to understand what the specific wording is. I read it, and it looked clean to me.
Okay, I can check back with David. And I don't know if Michael has been involved at all in drafting this as well, but I'll
yeah,
check.
No, Michael or David. Although
yes.
Michael is not technically a registry anymore, so I'm not sure he can speak on their behalf.
Right. I'll check with David and get some clarification on that one.
All right, we've made it through to real recommendations. Number nine.
Number nine, the first comment is from the IPC, and they recommend that the definition is updated so that it reflects also that it doesn't apply to a registrant that has lost a URS proceeding, as they know that such suspended domain name should follow a different set of processes.
Although I'm not sure we're going to find it easy to get the wording. I don't disagree in concept, James.
I don't disagree with the concept, but is this the place to solve that, or do we need to make sure the language of the URS solves that? I'm concerned that we don't want to pack all of the exceptions into this process, because there could be others that come down the pipeline later that would also need to be specifically called out. I think if we could put that language there, it would be more efficient.
I guess I tend to agree with you because I don't know. One has to look at the existing RAA and where it talks about responsibilities and rights of registrants or registrars, for that matter. You know, all of those get addressed by or altered, potentially altered, by URS or UDRP actions. And I think we need to be consistent in how we cover those. I'm not sure the right answer is, as suggested here, that each definition cover it. But clearly there needs to be some overriding one. So I think we need to get lawyers involved in this. But no one disagrees with the intent. So, Marika? Oh, Michaeli disagrees with the intent.
This is Marika. One way forward could maybe be, instead of changing the definition, is provide an additional note to the recommendation as part of an implementation consideration, and just basically tell staff, you know, where this would fit best, because I think they're the probably most knowledgeable as well on how the URS is structured or whether it should fit better in the UDRP. And so maybe it's just an implementation note we provide with this recommendation, noting that, you know, this shouldn't apply to domain names that are under URS or where, you know, URS has been lost, so that it's addressed in that way if the people that indeed know where it fits best and how it should be written out.
I think that's a good comment. We're not actually crafting RAA words here, although we're trying to be as close as we can. I think your point's well taken. Mateli.
The URS currently doesn't exist.
No, correct.
We're having enough difficulty working our way through policies related to things that currently exist. I would humbly suggest that we don't try to come up with wording or policies or processes to cover things that haven't been finalized as yet. So I would note their comments, but, you know, kind of go, look, out of scope. On a side note to that, if there are issues with this, with these kind of scenarios, which would also come into play with UDRPs, then we would put something along the lines of this would need to be addressed as a part of a broader revision of the UDRP.
Yeah, I think our intent when we've been doing all of this is to be talking about situations where there are not, cases before judicial bodies of one form or another, in terms of proving who is the person who has the rights to do something. So, I think Marika's comment is right on that we need to make sure that those who draft the final words make sure that that intent is covered. And I guess in our recommendations, we need an overriding statement to that effect, but I don't think we need to try to craft the right words. And all the more so for something that doesn't exist yet, which presumably is being crafted as we speak. Number 10.
So this is Marika. So support for the recommendation by the BC, the ALEC, and INTA. INTA does know that, in their view, that the second part of the definition is less clear, and, you know, they recommend either clarifying the applicability or the rationale. And I think this might be one of the items where I think it's very clear to the working group what we meant with that part, but maybe indeed it needs to be something that's, you know, clarified in further detail what the intent was behind that.
Marika, my memory is that that was added by staff to make sure that future changes in the registration agreement did not find a gotcha and invalidate the intent of the definition of the registered name holder at expiration, but did not necessarily map to a situation today.
Right. I think basically the rationale behind it is that, you know, currently most registration agreements, you know, provide for provision that, you know, upon expiration, who is details can be changed. So it was just basically to avoid that there would be a situation where that is changed to saying, you know, 1 hour before expiration, we're suddenly going to change that. So it's basically indeed to try to prevent that something like that would be created instead. So I think that was indeed the situation we're trying to address, but maybe we need to look back to clarify what the intent was, so it's clear as well for those that haven't been participating in all these calls what we're trying to say.
Okay. Let's go on. Number 11.
Number 11, this is concerns recommendation 2, and I think the most comments that we received actually related to this specific recommendation. So the first comment basically says that there should be, person feels that there should be a minimum of 12 working days instead of 8.
I would suggest that we defer discussion of the various recommendations for longer periods than 8 and discuss them as a single group towards the end of this discussion, unless there's any great desire to do them one by one as we go along now. Ron. then James, in that order. Ron, go ahead.
Wickersham. I'm not commenting specifically on number 11, but on the above recommendation, number 2 that was brought up there, the in order to make consistency that's understood, that can be understood by a registrant, should the right of the registrar to delete the domain name at any time be allowed on a case-by-case basis or only on a policy basis? I mean, if one registrar says, as a policy, we delete all domains at the end in as they expire, then that's something that can be understood. But it does affect registrants if a registrar has the right to delete it on a case-by-case basis and the registrant doesn't know what's going to happen in that case.
Currently, James, you had a comment, and then I have a question, Ron. And I have to switch phones because my battery is about to die on this one.
Okay, so just quickly, this is James. I was thinking there were 13 questions under this recommendation. Perhaps we could divide them into questions about the length of the recovery period and questions about other things, for example, DNS resolution path and what it means to be interrupted. I was thinking that, you know, maybe we can divvy them up that way and might make a little bit cleaner of a discussion on this charter question, because it seems to be the bulk of the comments.
I agree. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think in addition to the length of the period, I think there are also some comments that relate to when those 8 days should take place. I think that's not like maybe category as you're trying to separate items in relation to this recommendation. I think it's the duration, but also when that duration should take place. There are some comments that relate to that as well.
Noted. In terms of Ron's question, it's an interesting issue. James, maybe you know, the terms of the RAA say the name may be deleted at any time post-expiration. There is no requirement that the registrar inform the user ahead of time what their deletion policy is, though. Is that correct, as far as you know?
I don't know. I don't believe that's correct, because that would be in the EDDP somewhere, correct?
Yeah, I think the EDDP just has a blanket statement like we do, saying, you know, notwithstanding.
Okay. But, you know, I think to understood Ron's question, I think, well, I don't want to presume to understand it. Maybe can you rephrase and break it?
Well, my understanding of Ron's question, Ron, tell me if I'm wrong, is that currently with the words that we have, and I believe the words that are currently in place, a registrar can, on a case-by-case basis, decide this one is one we delete at day 0, this one's one we delete at day 10, and this one's one we delete at day 45. You know, assuming
yes,
they're going to delete at all, that there's no requirement that they be consistent or uniform in it.
No, and no, nor should there be. I mean, they could have different market segments, different.
Well, but you know, they could be covered by different registration agreements.
Right.
I think we're covering them in that, although there may be a cost issue in it, we are saying that if it's deleted, it must go into the RGP, which gives the registrant 30 days. So I think we're covering them through the RGP, and. I can't see any rationale within what we're doing to restrict the registrar in an ability they have right now and to change that just so we can make it clearer to the registrant. That sounds like too large a change to impose on registrars without a strong enough motivation. Ron, or Marika, I don't know who was first. Marika, why don't you go first, then Ron.
Yeah, this is Marika. I actually just posted in the chat the language that's from the EDDP, and as well it should be in the new REA, where it does state that, you know, the details of the renewal or the deletion and other renewal policies must be clearly displayed on the website, which
okay.
assumes there is a general, I mean, I presume they don't have for every registrant a different deletion policy up there, so it does presume a kind of uniform approach.
Yeah, I mean, the policy could be we select a random number and that will determine when we delete,
right.
but not likely.
Right.
Ron? Are you still with us, Ron? James, why don't you go ahead? Ron, we'll pick it up afterwards. Is James still with us? Ron, I see
James
is muted.
James is on mute. Sorry. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Well, Ron is on mute also.
Okay. Well, Marika
Ron
found it faster than I did. You know, I'll withdraw. I think that it's important that we in our drive to present as uniform an experience as possible, not to drive out any distinctions of choice for businesses or for the consumers that partake of those businesses and services. So that's just a general observation.
Okay. I think the words that Marika posted from 3.7.5.5 are about as clear as we're likely to write.
Yes, this is Ron again. May I speak?
Yeah. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. I got temporarily disconnected. The does our notification, the way we've worded our notification, include that the register, even if they delete it at 1 day, 5 days, or on a random period, that notification has to be sent to the registrar?
I'm not sure what our wording is. I believe the wording is talking about renewal, and if it's already been deleted, I would think there is no obligation to send a message
okay.
to inform them that it's not renewable anymore. I guess a registrar could do that. I'm not sure I want to require it.
But it is recoverable, but not renewable, right?
It's recover, yes. It is recoverable but not renewed. It's
but our wording says if it's deleted, then the registrar has no more obligation to communicate with the registrar.
Other than to implement the RGP to invoke the RGP.
Right.
There's no proactive requirement to communicate at that point, no.
Right. Okay.
James.
Okay, so I have a strange question here. Did we, and maybe we've discussed this. I missed a few calls there, I think, towards the end of February. But did we discuss that mathematically we have effectively eliminated registrars that might offer grace periods of less than 8 days? So that essentially if you go past the expiration without deleting it, you must have a minimum of 8 days in your time period. In other words, you have
no
choice on the expiration date. You either delete it or you're stuck with it for a minimum of 8 days.
No, our words say notwithstanding the registrar may delete the domain at any time during the auto renew grace period.
Okay. Okay. So we are accounting for
day
that.
Day two and a half.
To go two, 3 days in and say, you know what, this just really isn't my, for me, I'm having a cash flow problem this month or whatever. And it's up to the registry to recover these now and then they can throw them back.
That's the current situation, and I don't believe we changed anything in it. And
thank
I think
you.
We went to great pains to make sure we didn't change anything in it.
I thought so, too, but I just looked at it from a different angle, and I think I agree with you that we have covered that.
Certainly that was the intent. If our wording isn't right, we can fix it, but that I believe that was the intent, and the wording seems pretty bulletproof to me. Let's proceed.
And So the next comment, number 12, basically the person says, if registrars are going to be required to hold domains for 8 days past expirations, then registries should not be allowed to collect auto renewal fees until this 8-day period ends.
And my answer was registrars have the ability to delete if they choose not to. That's a business decision exactly as it is today. So I don't think we saw any need to change the existing business rules. Everyone happy with that answer? No complaints? Let's go on.
So number 13, this is a clarification that was suggested at the San Francisco meeting, basically that we clarify that when we talk about must be interrupted, that this is done by the registrar, not the registry.
That is a good point. And we should note that an issue was raised after the San Francisco meeting, or at least after the physical meeting in the room, that, Michele, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Doctel, registrars don't have the ability to do this?
That would be correct.
Yeah. So I think we need to cover that somehow. I'm not sure we want to. Marika, maybe you can look into what the details are and brief us on that.
Very, very simple, Alan.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Michele.
I mean, the Telnet contract with ICANN is very, very specific. And it mandates which kind of DNS records may or may not exist for a .tel domain name. The key facets are that A records cannot really exist, and at present, all .tel domain names and their, and in inverted commas, websites or content or records or however you want to describe them, are all hosted by Telnet. So, in other words, the registry acts as the hosting provider for all of them. The only record that currently related to something kind of in terms of traditional hosting that could point externally would be MX records, which can be specified, but every single .tel will have the same set of name servers. So any things that happen regarding a .tel domain name is controlled by the registry. The only thing that the registrar would control, obviously, is whether they're sending a renewal or an extend, delete, or whatever type command. Now, the thing is that we have no way of knowing what kind of models some of the new TLD operators will envisage. So whether or not this kind of scenario happens again in the future or not is impossible for us to say. But then again, you know, DNS provider, as James suggests, is probably a safe way of dealing with it at one level, as long as you qualify it.
Michele, would we address the current problem by a proviso in this recommendation that, you know, and I'm not trying to wordsmith it here, but to the extent that a registrar has the ability to change the DNS resolution for a domain, they must do this.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to. I mean, for once, Alan, I'm not trying to kind of be awkward here. I'm just trying to be.
No. I wasn't thinking you were awkward. I'm trying to, you know, think on the fly. Do we catch this case where a registrar simply doesn't have the ability to do it by saying if they don't have the ability, they don't have to?
Well, they can't. I mean, it's not even that they have to. You can't oblige me to do something that isn't within my power to do so.
Yeah. All I'm saying is if we put a proviso like that in, it sounds like we're addressing the current problem.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Personally, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we need to look at it and say the situation still exists for .tel, and therefore we need to put the onus on the registry to do it. I prefer not to go in that direction if we can avoid it, unless we know there's a real problem with .tel renewals.
I mean,
I certainly haven't heard of any reported.
Yeah, I'm not going to speak to that.
Okay. But James? James?
Yeah, so just thinking a little bit about this, you know, consensus policy is not just for registrars. If we want to compel the registries to do something that I think is definitely within our remit to include them in this recommendation. The other thing to point out is that DNS providers may not even be a contracted party. So I don't want to overcomplicate this here, but McKelly raises an important exception with .tel, and with new gTLDs coming, it's possible that other folks may also have clever ideas on how to get the DNS to do some new tricks. So I think we need to be careful here. I think, you know, where, you know, within their power or within their ability to interrupt the service is probably sufficient for 90% plus of cases, but I certainly wouldn't want ICANN compliance to give me a call saying I didn't do it for a .tel thing.
All right. Marika, that's noted, and I guess when we come back to refining wording, we'll try to do something about it.
This is Marika. On the next one, I think comments 14, 16, and 21 are related in relation to when this 8-day period should take place. I don't know. You want to take them together or skip them for now?
Let's take 14, and if the other one, the answer is the same, then so be it. What does it say?
This is Ron. I still had one brief comment.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yes. On the wording, I think rather than being trying to wordsmith generic things, I think just giving the example of the .tel would be make it clear and understandable, and trying to not mention their name specifically gets in the area of somebody reads it and says, what in the world is that for? So I like the idea, at least in our report, of being as clear as we can be.
Yeah, I think in a number of cases as we went along, it looks like we really need a rationale or a additional comment on the recommendations to help explain them, and this may be one of those cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you.
Thanks.
Marika, where were we? This is number 14 now?
This is Marika. Yes, that's correct. Basically, the IPC in relation to the 8-day period, they object to the fact that this is a floating period, and they suggest that it should be a strict and easily identifiable term for the RNHAE.
And I think the answer to that one is we carefully crafted it as not being at a specific time to allow for different business models, and for those registrars that want to delete very quickly or reassign very quickly, it could come at the very beginning. For those who wanted to provide business continuity and not disrupt the domain while they're trying to reach the registrant and get it renewed, which I think was certainly of import to the business community, among others, that registrars be allowed to do that. And this gives them the whatever model that they want to use. So I don't think we want to change that, although I can understand the desirability of clarity and simplicity. Is that a generally accepted answer? Anyone disagree? Nobody's saying anything, so we've either gone to sleep or everyone agrees. Number 15.
Marika, the recommendation 15, also from the IPC, they note that that we should revise the recommendation to make sure that it accommodates when a domain name is suspended under the URS, that the information web page should not be interrupted or is exempt from this recommendation.
Point taken.
So we're moving on to the next comment. 16 also relates to the eight consecutive days, also noting that at a random point in time might only create confusion. And the suggestion here is that the interruption should start at expiry and continue through the whole autumn new grace period, RGP, until it's renewed or restored.
Okay, so he is suggesting that it start at the beginning and go for the full 45 days or until it's deleted. The subject of length we will talk about separately in terms of starting at the beginning. I think we've already addressed that. 17.
Next comment, number 17, a person provide a concrete definition for what DNS interruption should mean.
And my comment was, if it's not clear now, we need to make it clear, and explanatory note or whatever should make that clear. 18.
This comment relates to, more question, why should a registrar have the right to delete a domain name at any time during the auto-renew grace period? Why not only in the last 5 days of that period?
And I think we've already addressed that. It's a current provision. We saw no need to change it to address the problem that we're trying to address. 19 is a length of time one. We won't talk about it. 20 is the same thing. I'll point out that 19 and 20 are slightly different in their wording, and I will admit that Barry and I did have a private discussion about this. The BC suggestion says that the eight-day period be increased to be 30 days. Which implies 30 days of blackout. The ALAC period, the ALAC comment said the period should be increased, but not necessarily the blackout period. And those are two subtle differences. Barry, do you want to comment? Are you standing by the exact wording, or was your intent essentially what the ALAC said?
Hi, Alan. The latter. Thank you.
Okay. So we can treat the BC comment essentially as being equivalent to the ALAC one in terms of not necessarily requiring a full blackout for the full guaranteed period. But we'll discuss the period later. 21.
This is Marika again, a comment from INTA. They're requesting a clarification when that eight-day period should take place. I guess if it's not clear from the recommendation, maybe there's something to emphasize either in the rationale or...
Yeah, I think it was clear enough that they understood it. yes, I think we're going to have to go into some depth about this one just to make sure there is no misunderstanding, among other things, for those who actually are writing the words for the RAA. 22. And I note we're 9 minutes before the call, so let's try to perhaps stop after this one.
This is Marika. There's another comment from INTA. They also request a clarification here. They note that the time frame in which a registrar must have the domain resolved to its original DNS path is not specified, but it's just stated that within a commercially reasonable delay.
That one, if I remember correctly, we said something like immediately or some words similar to that, and that was one of the registrars on the call suggested that we give them a little bit of latitude to be a reasonable time delay, and that resulted in the commercially reasonable delay. I noted in my comment that sometime in the last few weeks I read some document, and I can't remember for the life of me what it is. It was either UDRP or IRTP, where it talked about the registry being required. I think it was reversing an IRTP transfer, that the registry had to do it effectively immediately. and I don't remember the exact words, but it was it wasn't nearly as flexible as commercially reasonable delay. Does anyone else recall reading that or writing it, perhaps, James?
Well, the transfer reversal process went away. It was negotiated into a puff of smoke or a pile of bones within RTP, but I think it did contain that. I think it also said something along the lines of commercially practical or reasonable or something like that within the new replacement system that we're proposing, the emergency action system, as well as other systems in the RAA, for example, the updating of who is information when you receive changes from the registrant, you know, how much time does the registrar have to get that to the registry. And I think that we're trying to allow for different levels of service, different levels of technical acumen, the possibility that the connection between the registrar and the registry is something that's not owned by either party, and therefore they are somewhat dependent upon outside parties as well, outside service providers. So I think having, you know, reasonable or commercially practical is probably the best and most appropriate language.
All right. I guess if better words are coming out of some other process in the same time frame as we're writing them, let us know. Other than that, I think we'll stick with this one until we have someone suggesting something better. And shall we stop now? I don't mind giving us 2-3 minutes off. We've gone about a third of the way in, and that was including the first 5 or 6, which took a significant amount of time. So I'm comfortable that we're making good progress here, and I would suggest we keep on doing this on the next meeting, and perhaps we'll get through the bulk of them at the next meeting. Anything else needs to be discussed, or do we adjourn and give you each 2 or 3 minutes of your own? We have a couple of okays on the chat, and then I thank you all for your participation, and see you in a week, or on the email list sometime before. Thank you all. Bye bye.
Thanks, Alan. See you.
Bye.